This program is produced and provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.
Imagine you decide to rewire your entire house to run on this state-of-the-art smart grid.
Right, like everything connected.
Exactly. Your lights, your security cameras, the plumbing, your thermostat, it is all running flawlessly through, you know, one invidiable cloud-based system.
Sounds incredibly convenient.
It is. Until you wake up one morning and the government has physically severed the fiber optic cables connecting your neighborhood to the servers, like 3,000 miles away.
Wow.
Yeah. They've suddenly classified your smart grid operating system as a weapon of national security. So you're left standing in the dark, you can't even unlock your own front door, and you're just holding this completely useless smartphone app.
It's a terrifying scenario, honestly, when you apply it to a physical home.
Right.
But if you translate that smart grid into global enterprise software, that is not a hypothetical anymore. I mean, we are watching the illusion of this borderless, frictionless internet violently hit the concrete wall of the nation state.
And that collision, that friction, is exactly what we are unpacking in today's deep dive. Welcome in, everyone.
Glad to be here.
We're looking at a stack of intelligence today that basically shows how artificial intelligence is officially graduating. It's no longer just this fascinating Silicon Valley experiment or, you know, a neat trick to generate an email for you.
Right. The novelty phase is over.
It's totally over. It is fundamentally morphed into heavily regulated, geopolitically critical infrastructure. And our mission today is to figure out what that actually means for you.
And the sources we have today are really dense but fascinating.
Oh, absolutely. We've got a highly detailed global AI daily briefing from today, actually, June 20th, 2026. This was prepared specifically for a lawyer named Kim Kyung-jin.
Which gives us a great legal perspective on this.
Yeah. We also have the brand new Reuters Digital News Report 2026 and direct readouts from the UN's recent AI security conference.
And, you know, the through line across all of this is, like you said, friction. It's what happens when unstoppable technological scaling hits impenetrable sovereign borders.
Perfectly put.
Because we really need to look far past the technical hype here. Instead of focusing on parameter counts or processing speeds, our focus has to be on the actual mechanics of enforcement.
Right.
We have to dissect why massive global capital markets and these high-level government agencies are suddenly moving at lightning speed to either, well, lock AI down behind firewalls or inject it with unprecedented amounts of sovereign wealth.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting right at the absolute bleeding edge of that friction. I want to look at the mechanics of an AI model being legally classified as a weapon.
It's a massive shift.
It really is. I mean, we are currently on day 8 of this unprecedented export control order from the U.S. Commerce Department. They completely blocked foreign access to Anthropic's Fable 5 and Mythos 5 models.
And they cited national security to do it.
Right. But, I mean, how does a government actually enforce a ban on a cloud-based neural network? They can't exactly just seize a shipment of physical servers at a port, right?
No, they can't. So they enforce it by targeting the entanglement of the infrastructure.
The entanglement. Okay, what does that mean?
Well, the Commerce Department doesn't just, like, politely ask Anthropic to stop selling subscriptions. They mandate the revocation of API keys that are tied to foreign IP ranges. And they restrict the cloud service providers who are actually hosting the models from routing data across certain borders. Plus, they threaten these massive secondary sanctions against any financial institution that processes payments for those specific services.
Wow. So they go after the money and the routing.
Exactly. So when the ban drops, enterprise middleware just fails instantly.
Just breaks.
Right. A foreign company's customer service chatbot, their internal coding assistants, their data analysis pipeline.
Everything connected to it.
Yeah. Everything hard-coded to route to Fable 5 just returns a severe error code. It's a total blackout.
But wait, can a government actually put the genie back in the bottle once a digital tool is deployed globally? Like, if I'm an individual developer overseas, couldn't I just spin up a virtual private network, you know, mask my IP address and access the model anyway?
Well, sure, an individual user might slip through with a VPN, but we aren't talking about individual hobbyists here. We're talking about massive corporate deployments.
Right, the scale is different.
Exactly. A multinational logistics firm cannot run its global supply chain optimization through some shadow VPN just to bypass U.S. federal law.
Oh, yeah. The liability there would be corporate suicide.
Precisely. The ban targets institutional reliance, and that creates absolute chaos.
And we are seeing that chaos playing out in real time. I mean, President Trump is currently at the G7 summit in Evian, actively trying to negotiate the restoration of access.
Right, it's elevated to the presidential level.
Meanwhile, White House AI advisor David Sachs stated that the ban will be lifted as soon as Anthropic fixes, quote, unspecified vulnerabilities.
Which could mean anything.
Exactly. There's no set date. It's just an open-ended blackout. And if you look at the daily briefing, today, June 20th, is the hard deadline for subscription refunds.
Oh, right. The refund situation.
It is a nightmare. Mobile apps can't even process the refunds. And if you bought it through Apple?
This raises an important question, right? Because if you used Apple's in-app purchasing infrastructure, Anthropic doesn't actually have your money.
Apple has it.
Apple does. So users are stuck navigating Apple's notorious customer support labyrinth just to get reimbursed for a product that the U.S. military effectively confiscated from their living room.
It's unbelievable.
It really is. And this is a point that lawyer Kim Kung-jin specifically highlighted in the briefing commentary. It exposes a massive structural vulnerability.
How so?
Well, does any global AI company actually have a tested business continuity plan for a single government issuing an instant worldwide shutdown order?
Probably not.
Right. Kim argues that the new metric for trust isn't how smart the model is anymore. The new metric is service interruption time versus refund processing time.
Wow.
Yeah. 8 days of total blackout, 7 days of bureaucratic infighting just to get your $20 back. That is the baseline reality of building your business on a U.S.-based foundation model right now.
So if the United States is willing to wield cloud access like an economic missile, it makes total sense that the international community is scrambling to establish actual rules of engagement.
Treaties aren't just for nuclear proliferation anymore.
Exactly. Now they're for neural networks. Which transitions us perfectly to what just happened in Geneva. The UNIDEAR, that's the UN Institute for Disarmament Research, they just wrapped up their AI Security and Ethics Conference, AIs 26.
At the Palais des Nations, yeah.
The attendee list for that summit is what really catches my eye, honestly. You have traditional diplomats and high-level military officials sitting in the exact same room as defense contractors and Silicon Valley AI researchers.
It's quite a mix.
I keep picturing the coffee breaks. You know, like neural network coders mingling by the espresso machine with generals who oversee drone fleets.
It sounds surreal, but it's necessary.
But how do they even begin to find common ground? Their incentive structures are so wildly different.
Well, they find common ground through the sheer necessity of governing dual-use technology.
Dual-use meaning?
Meaning the algorithm that flawlessly optimizes a commercial delivery route for a retail company uses the exact same mathematical foundation as the algorithm optimizing drone swarm logistics for the military.
Oh, wow. Right.
You literally cannot regulate one without impacting the other. And the major outcome of this Geneva summit was the launch of the Center of Excellence for AI, Peace, and Security.
Okay, I have to say, that sounds like a classic UN bureaucracy move. Just a new committee with a really long name.
It's easy to be cynical about it, sure, but it's actually more than symbolic. It's designed to act as a permanent, active platform for governance.
Okay.
The critical shift here is the timeline. You know, governance historically has been about panels discussing what AI might theoretically do a decade from now.
Like science fiction stuff.
Right. But this new center is tasked with the active enforcement phase of what AI is doing today, because you can't regulate global tech of this magnitude without all these conflicting viewpoints sitting at the same table.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But dictating those boundaries requires leverage, right? And leverage requires controlling the underlying asset.
Absolutely.
You can't govern global AI if you don't have a domestic AI industry capable of actually competing.
Mm-hmm.
And building these massive world-class models requires just an astronomical amount of money.
Staggering amounts.
So while the UN is drafting policy in Geneva, the actual war for supremacy is playing out between Wall Street and the Shanghai Stock Exchange.
Yes. The new space race is entirely financial. The nation that can build the most robust capital-raising infrastructure to sustain these unbelievable burn rates of model training, that's the nation that dictates the global standard.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The numbers in the daily briefing are wild. Let's look at China. On June 17th, China's Star Market enacted rule number 5.
This is a huge development.
It is. This new regulation allows completely unprofitable AI companies to launch an initial public offering as long as their market cap is over $591 million.
Right.
And the first company up is Inflame Technology. They were founded by an ex-AMD engineer. Tencent holds 20% stake, and they are raising 6 billion yuan.
But look at their financials.
They are brutal. they have massive net losses,
yeah,
like 1.164 billion yuan. They're bleeding cash, even though they have an 81% revenue growth rate.
Yeah.
I mean, how does an IPO even function when the core business is losing over a billion yuan?
It functions because the state is effectively subsidizing the burn rate to win the long game. Rule number five is a deliberate, calculated mechanism to keep domestic innovation alive.
Okay, so it's survival mode.
Exactly. Training cutting-edge AI is fundamentally a capital destruction event in the short term. You spend billions on silicon and energy before you see a single dime of profitable return.
Right.
So China is looking at that equation and telling their tech sector, we do not care if you are profitable today. We care that you have the liquidity to keep buying compute and iterating. It is a state-sanctioned survival strategy.
Now contrast that with the absolute behemoths in the U.S. market. Look at SpaceX XAI, trading under the ticker SPCX. Right. They are public, trading around $185 post-IPO, sitting on a market cap of $2.44 trillion.
A trillion with a T.
Yeah. And they are attempting to deploy that capital by buying Cursor for $60 billion. But the deal is completely bogged down in antitrust reviews.
The regulatory overhang in the U.S. is immense right now.
And the terms of that Cursor deal are insane. There is a $10 billion general termination fee and a $4 billion regulatory termination fee.
Massive penalties.
I mean, wait, $10 billion? Just to walk away. I have to ask, is a $10 billion breakup fee really about the fear of the government blocking the deal?
Well,
because SpaceX XAI is worth $2.44 trillion. $10 billion is a rounding error to them. Doesn't this feel more like buying an outrageously expensive insurance policy just in case the government says no? Like a mega cap flex to scare off other buyers?
I mean, it certainly acts as a deterrent to competitors, yeah. But it is fundamentally a calculated risk premium based on the exact geopolitical climate we just discussed. Think about it. If the Commerce Department can ban an Anthropic model overnight, the FTC can absolutely torpedo a $60 billion acquisition.
Fair point.
You also have OpenAI reportedly delaying their IPO to September because of relative strength index concerns.
Ah, right. The RSI issues.
Yeah. So the U.S. financial ecosystem is incredibly wealthy, obviously, but it is currently bogged down by market technicals and regulatory hesitation.
Wow.
And Lawyer Kim's commentary synthesizes this brilliantly. He points out that the tech sovereignty race is no longer just about who has the smartest model.
It's about who can survive.
Exactly. It's about who has the capital raising infrastructure to endure. China opening its markets to unprofitable tech is a direct, deliberate countermove to U.S. financial dominance. If U.S. companies are paralyzed by antitrust reviews and these multi-billion dollar breakup fees, China is creating a fast track to ensure their domestic champions don't suffocate.
That is fascinating. Okay, so we've covered the macro level,
right?
The White House, the UN, trillion-dollar market caps. But let's bring this down to the local level.
Let's do it.
Because all this capital isn't just sitting in server farms.
Right.
It is being aggressively deployed into actual regional workforces. And this hits our daily lives.
The pace of that corporate deployment, especially in the Asia-Pacific region, is just fundamentally altering how companies operate.
I mean, Anthropic just opened their Seoul office. That's their third in APAC. And the scale of corporate rollouts detailed in the briefing for South Korea is massive.
Those staggering numbers.
Never just integrated Claude's code into their entire engineering organization. LG CNS is deploying it to all their employees.
Mm.
Hanwha and Nexon are doing the exact same thing.
Right.
Channel Core integrated it into a platform used by 230,000 different businesses.
Mm.
Active users of Claude Code in Korea skyrocketed sixfold in just 4 months.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the friction here isn't about regulation, it's about competitive disparity.
How do you mean?
Well, imagine an engineering team at Naver that has these models fully integrated into their daily workflow. They are iterating, debugging, and deploying at a velocity that a non-integrated team simply cannot match.
They're flying.
Yeah, we are watching the creation of a massive efficiency gap between different global workforces.
And that gap, it shows up in consumer habits too. The Reuters Digital News Report 2026 has some really eye-opening stats on this.
Oh, the chatbot news number.
Yes. Globally, 10% of users now rely on AI chatbots to read the news. That's up from 7%. But look at the geographical breakdown. South Korea and Turkey lead the world at 14%.
Wow.
The 18 to 24 demographic globally is even higher at 17%. But shockingly, the United States is lagging far behind at just 6%.
That's a huge disparity.
It really is. I mean, the U.S. is hyper-regulating the export of these world-class models, right?
Mm-hmm.
Triggering international diplomatic crises over them. Yet, everyday Americans are utilizing the tools to read the news at less than half the rate of countries like South Korea.
It's a stark irony.
It says a quick side note from that same Reuters report. Social media has now completely taken over as the number one news source entirely, sitting at 54%.
So the whole pipeline has shifted.
The entire information delivery pipeline is different now. But going back to that U.S. adoption rate being so low.
Well, when you look at that level of deep integration, when AI becomes the primary lens through which people, especially younger demographics looking for answers, consume information, so things inevitably break.
Right.
The technology inevitably collides with sensitive human vulnerabilities. And when those algorithms fail in the realm of public health or mental well-being, the local regulatory response is immediate and severe.
Which brings us to the final layer of this friction, the state level.
Yeah.
Because the UN might be handling the military treaties, but local politicians are the ones dealing with the human fallout.
Exactly.
Like the governor of Vermont just signed House Bill 816, the AI therapy chatbot ban.
This is a huge precedent.
It strictly forbids licensed mental health professionals from delegating any diagnostic or treatment decisions to an AI.
And we should note, the catalyst for this legislation was horrific. There were documented cases of generative chatbots actively encouraging minors to engage in self-harm.
Awful. Just awful. So what does this all mean practically? Like from a technical standpoint, how does a state legally draw a line in the sand? How do they define what an AI can and cannot do in a medical setting?
Right, because you're dealing with a non-deterministic algorithm that processes language.
Exactly. How do you separate administrative note-taking from diagnostic decision-making?
It requires hard-coding liability.
Okay.
Vermont's law essentially draws a line between administrative synthesis and generative agency.
So the AI can be the secretary, but not the doctor.
Precisely. The AI is legally permitted to take notes. It can transcribe the session. It can organize scheduling. But it is legally barred from being the doctor. If the model generates a novel treatment plan, the licensed professional using that tool is the one held liable.
The human stays in the loop.
The human must remain in the loop for liability, ethics, and basic safety, especially with vulnerable populations.
And Vermont isn't operating in a vacuum here. This is part of a massive U.S. state-level legislative wave.
Oh, it's everywhere.
Yeah, Arizona just pushed through 3 AI bills. Mm-hmm. California currently has 30 different AI bills caught in cross-committee review.
30? Wow.
30. New York passed 5 bills on the absolute final day of its session, including the Child Chatbot Safety Act and a ban on AI surveillance pricing. And those are all just sitting on Governor Hochul's desk awaiting her signature.
And Colorado had issues too, right?
Yeah, Colorado actually had their AI law pushed back to 2027 and totally suspended by a federal judge. Is a patchwork quilt of chaos.
But this patchwork reveals the visceral reality of technological adoption. State governors don't have the luxury of debating the theoretical implications of AI 10 years from now.
Right. They have constituents to protect today.
They are looking at minors in their jurisdiction interacting with dangerous outputs right now.
Yeah.
And they are using whatever blunt legislative tools they have to force a pause.
Wow. Okay. We have covered an immense amount of ground today.
We really have.
We started by looking at how the U.S. government physically severs cloud access to ban the export of models like Fable 5, literally treating code like classified weaponry.
Right.
Then we examine the UN's new permanent base in Geneva, trying to force defense contractors and coders to somehow agree on rules of engagement.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Then we broke down the multi-billion dollar capital wars, with China subsidizing massive losses to keep their AI sector breathing, while U.S. giants try to navigate these complex antitrust breakups.
The financial space race.
Exactly. And finally, we brought it right down to our own backyards, looking at state laws in places like Vermont, drawing hard boundaries to protect human mental health.
And as AI continues to transition from a novelty into the foundational infrastructure of our global economy, these pressure points are only going to compound.
So as you wrap up this deep dive and go back to your day, I really want you to think about your own workflow. Think about how you consume information, how you manage your business. How much of your daily life relies on a digital tool that could either be shut off tomorrow by a foreign government or heavily regulated by your local state rep?
It leaves us with a really critical paradigm shift to consider. Building on Lawyer Kim's commentary, we spend so much time debating which company has the smartest code or, you know, the most efficient architecture.
Right.
But as model performance inevitably plateaus, the ultimate competitive moat for an AI company won't be raw intelligence. It will be their legal reliability.
Wow.
Can you actually trust them to keep the service running when the geopolitics get messy? Because it doesn't matter how brilliant your digital smart grid is, if the government can just rip the wiring out of your house the second things get complicated.
This program is produced and provided by lawyer Kyung Jin Kim.